Escapism to human beings is like cheese to a rat. We always find new ways of getting through the maze of reality to get the prize, whether it be reading fiction, playing video games, creating fake online dating profiles, or kicking back with a few mojitos. We seem pretty programmed to want to tune out, plug in, chill out, and disappear. I'm sitting down with Lloyd Summers, a virtual reality video game developer who works in the Unity platform and has just taken the leap from the corporate world to focus on his game development company, which is?
Red Iron Labs.
Sweet. His company happens to specialize in virtual reality software. And some of you that know things that I don't have followed the development of Oculus Rift, for example, and are up to speed on all things virtual reality, but for gaming philistines such as myself, the idea of virtual reality still seems super duper high tech, like we're living in a Tron movie with only a stand-up arcade 3D boxing game from the 80s to use as any kind of reference. It seems like we're always upping the ante, but the question is whether or not the VR industry has what it takes to last. So hi, Lloyd. Welcome to CJSW, home of all things subculture-esque.
Hi, Jordan. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. Okay, so obviously video games touch the lives of most people, with everybody having at least a little knowledge of what's up, whether it be spending 6 hours streaming your World of Warcraft raids or playing Candy Crush on the bus. But I doubt that most people are familiar with this new age of virtual reality gaming. Can you give us a bit of an overview of what you do?
Yeah, sure. So some people might know that virtual reality kind of had its first kind of commercialization back in the Nintendo days. There was the Virtual Boy. And that was a unique experience.
Yep.
And what's interesting is a lot of the issues that we encountered then are still prevalent in the hardware today. But what we're facing is an interesting time where cell phones and modern devices have gotten smaller and quicker and faster and better.
Smarter than us.
And cheaper and more affordable and things like that. And for sure, smarter than me some days. And so that's really driven down the size of technology, which means the idea of stuffing an entire screen with audio capabilities and everything into a single headset is doable now. And so what we're seeing is kind of the first generation of I call them the generation one, but it's really the new generation of virtual reality devices.
Can you give us a little overview of what the gaming experience might be like these days compared to those of us that have used the old technology?
Yeah, great question. Yeah, so the old technology was, you know, usually one color, kind of lines, very simple 3D graphics, but now we're
not super 3D, in other words.
Yeah, exactly. And it was attractive in its time, but you know, now we have 8-core processors on a cell phone that can power a 3D headset. And so really, whatever you can get out of an Xbox or a PlayStation game today, you could do that in virtual reality.
Right.
And so for a gaming thing, the biggest thing is, even for VR buffs, you put on the headsets these days and you look at it and it's so real that it's kind of a shock to the system.
Startling.
Yeah.
Yeah, it totally would be. And especially because you guys specialize in horror games, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we deal with our goal when we got into VR was a lot of the companies were playing it safe. They didn't want to, you know, go in too much too fast because it's such a new experience to people that it throws you off. And our decision was, we want to go for the power users, the people who aren't afraid to get a little scared.
Who have wanted this for a long time.
Exactly. And have followed the hardware and they're excited to see it. And
yeah.
And so for us, we wanted to get something that was, you know, much more kind of modern in the way we do movies, for example. You know, like, horror is much scarier now than it was 10 years ago.
For sure. And I can't even watch them.
Exactly. And when you put on a VR headset and something can chase you through a house, it's a terrifying feeling, and it's great. I love it.
So what are some of the limitations of the VR gaming experience? What are some of the things that you guys have to overcome?
Yeah, great question. So there's two elements. One is that the standard way we've done video games for, you know, the last 20-odd, 30-odd years doesn't really apply. So we've had a lot of control over where people can look and interact with things, and we really control what the user sees. And in VR, we can't do that anymore. So the user has the freedom to say, hey, I want to look at this wall for 20 minutes. Because for them, it's new. It's a shiny wall. I've never seen a virtual wall before. And so as a game development company, you got to stop and say, okay, how can I work it into my game so that I don't take them away from that wall? And if they want to look at it for 20 minutes, allow them.
Give them the the freedom to do so.
Yeah. And so for level design, for example, it really challenges what we do, because normally in a level, you kind of lead the person through a series of things to get to that climactic kind of point at the end. But when they can choose what they look at, and they may choose to disengage.
So is it like open world concept?
Yeah. And it was interesting because I saw a presentation from Ubisoft where they were talking about their first open world concepts and the challenges they have. And they're so identical to what we're doing in VR, because you can't predict the user. The user might, they don't want to.
And you don't want to predict the user. You want it to be a unique gaming experience, probably.
Exactly. And like, they might not want to go save the character. They might want to actually go play in the city.
Screw the character. Yeah.
I want to
pick flowers.
Person. Why am I going to go help them?
I'm going to build a house, feed my horse, go to bed.
Exactly. And you see that in Bethesda games, where somebody stops playing the game in Fallout because they want to go build cities instead.
Right. And it should be like that, because what about technology in these days isn't totally customized?
Exactly.
That's the appeal.
Exactly. And so it's a huge challenge from a technical perspective, but the end result is when you give people that freedom where, yeah, you can go build a city and you can look around and...
It creates more work for you guys.
Oh, yeah. Big time. It means you have to consider all the iterations, where in old-fashioned gaming, it was a tunnel. You could, you know, predict every movement that user's going to make.
Yeah.
And now you're like, okay, you don't want to go save the princess, so I got to find something interesting to give you to
do. Damn it.
Yeah. And another good trick that a company was using is they call it, are you going to be a wizard, or are you a wizard? And what happens is if the user chooses not to engage, in this case, they're not opening a book. They've refused, I'm not opening the spell book. There's no way I'm opening the spell book. And so they challenge them and say, do you want to be a wizard, or do you not want to be? Because you bought a wizard game, so if you don't open that book, we're not going anywhere. And when people make the choice to buy in, it's a hugely different experience, because then they're excited and they'll want to play. And they get right into the game after that, so that's kind of interesting.
So I've done some reading. VR sickness, is it a thing, like to experience vertigo and motion sicknessy type feelings?
Yeah, absolutely. So this is something that we started to see with the Nintendo Virtual Boy, where you'd get headaches and... but you'd also get nausea and get discomfort. And we saw this again when VR started to go through its new age revamp. And they're still figuring out some of the reasons why, but there's two parts. One is how fast things are coming at your face in the images, the refresh rate, and all of that has a factor. But the other thing is the psychology of it. So take, for example, a vehicle. If you see somebody who gets motion sick in a car, it's because...
Not looking where they're going.
They're not looking where they're going, and all that motion is making you feel like you're moving, but your body doesn't feel like it's moving.
Yeah, and you're actually stationary. Yeah.
And we get that in VR. So if your room and what you're feeling around you doesn't match what you're seeing inside the goggles, it'll start to make you uncomfortable. And there's a lot of different ways they're challenging that, improving technology, of course. But the biggest thing is you got to really design your games at a slower pace than you would normally. And what I've found is, like, I've played a couple games that do still make me nauseous on the new hardware. And there was a space simulator I was playing, and, you know, you're running away from other spaceships, and it's a multiplayer and called Valkyrie. And you're spinning around upside down on all these angles, and then finally you feel like you're in a cockpit of, like, you're going to get sick and you just can't help
that's
it.
That's it. And but you'd never want that to challenge gameplay. I mean, that would be a really... That'd be a big downside.
It would
People getting sick and having to turn off the game and waiting until they feel better to play.
Exactly.
I mean, that's not relaxing.
And the other flip side is then somebody who's not wearing a VR headset doesn't get sick, so they'll have a statistical advantage against the other characters.
Right.
And that's not fair either, because you want the VR guy who can look over his shoulders and shoulder check to get that advantage of the new technology.
Yeah. Especially in a competitive gaming scenario, for sure.
Yeah, and competitive gaming especially, like you said.
You want to have the edge, especially if you're paying for the edge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and games are so competitive. And if at the end of the day, the guy or girl, if it's slowing them down, they're going to take the equipment off.
Yeah.
And then at that point, you've kind of lost the
And then what's the point? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk more about the cost of the equipment. Is this more of a boutique gaming market where you'd have to invest in hardware or powerful PC to even participate?
Yeah, that's another really good question. So the hardware we're seeing right now is part of the challenge. So as a developer, every company wants you to use their SDK. So Oculus wants you using the Oculus SDK.
Sure. And that's Facebook owned, right?
Yeah, that one's owned by Facebook now. And Vive wants you using theirs, which is owned by Steam.
Right.
And all of these companies. And the company I've been really working with the most is called OSVR, and they're open source. And they took the challenge on of, instead of making people come to us, we'll make everybody's equipment compatible with our SDK. You build, kind of build once, and you can push it to all platforms is the idea. And it's really, really cool, a really, really challenging goal for them to go for.
Yeah, to be multi-platform.
Yeah. But so on the pricing side, so that's one challenge is you have to have, you know, obviously the SDK and whatever games you buy have to support the hardware you buy. But there's really several different types of choices. You got your power systems, which are like Oculus, which is the first market.
Yeah.
Very pretty, very cool.
Yeah, of course.
And very high end. But it runs on probably 5% of computers out there today.
Oh, okay.
So it's a small.
So you do have to you have to upgrade everything.
Yeah, for Oculus.
To be able to use that.
Yeah. The Vive is the even prettier product coming out. It takes up full room control. It does some really cool stuff. Like you can push a button to switch and see a through a camera on there, and it shows the world as a Tron view, and it's just so cool.
Oh, that is cool.
But they're even more
But are
expensive.
They kind of gimmicky? Like, or is it worth the money to you, do you think? Like, if you're getting into this world.
If you really play a lot of games, or if you want something really immersive, then go for those headsets.
Yeah.
But when you take the Canadian dollar versus the US dollar, you're going to end up paying a grand or more, and then you need to buy hardware upgrades for your computer.
Or a whole new computer.
Yeah. So the other two options are OSVR goes, it'll run on whatever, however fast your computer is, it'll just try to work.
Oh, okay. So it might be a little slower gameplay.
Yeah.
But presumably your games are a little slower paced anyway, so that could maybe not be a problem.
Yeah. And their pricing is about half the price. So you save a bundle there. But yeah, like you said, they're also still in development, so they're not commercial yet.
Yeah.
But if you have an Android device or a Samsung Gear phone, for example, there's also mobile VR solutions.
And, oh, cool.
What's interesting to me is right now we're kind of looking at Generation 1. These are these big bulky headsets with cables that flow down to machines.
Yeah, that are a little cumbersome and they look a little ridiculous. I mean,
They do.
They're not, you have to be in a room with other people to have it fully appreciated, this cool thing that you're wearing on your face.
Yeah, you wouldn't like put it on at a coffee shop. People will make fun of you a little bit.
Yeah, definitely not.
But what was really cool is I just came from a VR conference, and at the VR conference, there was three tiny startups creating their own headsets that were completely wireless, completely self-contained. They don't
use
a smaller. Cell phone, nothing. Yeah. And they felt like they weighed nothing. They were so light. And
so that to me reminds me of when iPhones first came out. And everybody said, like, is this totally necessary, this technology? Mm-hmm. You know, it's really expensive. It does a lot of stuff. Like, is the common man even going to need to use all this stuff? But they made it small enough and convenient enough that soon now everybody has an iPhone.
That's exactly it. And
they took over the market.
Yeah, they took over the market.
And maybe it is more than most people need, but everybody still owns one.
Yeah.
Even if it's just to make calls. My mom has an iPhone that she can't text on. It's way more powerful than she needs, but she's got one.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, you don't have
despite
to use
Despite the cost.
Yeah. You don't have to use it all. You can just use what you want out of it. And but it's exactly like that. So that's the Generation 2. Realistically, it'll be a couple years before those kind of come. And most likely everything that we have now
is be perfected.
Yeah.
So it'll be obsolete.
And that's what kicked us into our game company is when we met with these other companies, we realized every EA Games, all these big companies are at the same spot we are, which is we're at the beginning.
Right.
And so it's kind
of you're all starting at a starting line together.
Exactly. And in game development, everybody's pretty friendly. So we'll share lessons learned with each other and things like that. And
it's a community.
Yeah, it's a community. You can get in early now. But you won't really see the rewards until next year.
And right.
That's kind of where I see the big change coming is in the next 12 months.
Cool. So do you see this as the future of gaming, despite having a quality of isolation? A lot of video gaming is done alone, but with a VR-type game, you're flying totally solo with a big gadget obscuring your vision. You're totally focused on the game.
That's a tough challenge. We have a couple really big ones, and multiplayer is one. And I like to call it
feeling
multi-user.
Feeling like you're part of a team.
Mm-hmm. And the reason I say multi-user is multiplayer, to me, it includes like LAN parties, like you're hanging out in a basement with a bowl of chips and 12 people. And you can't do that with a headset on because you can't see each other.
Right. So that would, I mean, your quality of togetherness would become obsolete. Exactly. You'd be together, but you'd be still alone.
Yeah. And what I thought was surprising is the number of games that have come out for the Oculus that are multiplayer. There's quite a few.
Yeah.
And they're selling like crazy.
Right.
So there's definitely a huge demand for that online multiplayer. And one of the challenges we were given from Razer, one of our partners, is to come up with a way to do a horror game that has two players. So you can see what happens to the other person.
Right.
And
Switch views?
Not switch views, just like it's the over-the-shoulder thing. So if you're talking to somebody, they can't see what's coming up behind them, but you can.
Oh,
and if they're a friend of yours and they're
so
in the room,
it's collaborative.
With you, that kind of extra fear factor. And
that's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I can see why that's appealing.
So and it's a fun challenge, and so we're meeting that challenge for them for the end of April.
Cool. Oh, yeah. That's awesome. So you guys specialize, let's talk more about your horror games.
Sure.
Which is a natural fit for virtual reality because nothing distracts from being trapped in an asylum with a bunch of half-zombie inmates, quite like your mom vacuuming in the background. So it'd be kind of great to be able to put these headsets on and be immersed.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. You guys, what kind of games? Like, you said scary, but, and I know you mean scary, like you're not...
Yeah.
You're not messing around.
Yeah.
Scary is scary.
Our first goal in the company was to not hold back. And to that extent, there's so many great horror movies used as examples, but the psychology that goes into a game, because there's eerie and there's scary. And you know you've got it good when somebody screams out loud, and especially if you're watching
throws
that
off
person.
The headset.
If only one of you is wearing the headset, watching the other person is quite funny.
Oh yeah, I'm sure.
And that's the idea, though, is you also don't want it so scary that they're going to play for 2 minutes and never play again. So
right.
There is a story arc you got to put in. And
to build them up.
Yeah.
Build up a tolerance.
Mm-hmm. And get them kind of ready for it and not like, because it's new technology. If you throw something scary at them right away, they're just going to take the headset off and
right.
they're done. So for us, it's all about the story arc, building up that immersion. The goal is that after 10 minutes, I don't want you to realize you're in VR anymore. I want you to feel like you're
it's
in
real.
An actual room. And after 10 minutes, if I start scaring you, it feels more real to you. And there's some great games that have done that where you, one, for example, they tell you to sit on a couch. You put the headset on, and inside the headset, you're sitting on a couch.
Right.
And inside that game, they're playing on an Xbox. And so...
Oh, that's a cool idea.
Yeah, so scary things start happening in the second room that's kind of not really the room you're in, but it
right.
feels like it because of the way you're playing. And it's
God,
just
that's
incredible.
A lot of levels.
It's incredible.
That's confusing.
Yeah, and your brain finally just kind of connects that as reality when it isn't, and it's
right.
it's so cool.
There must be this feeling of inertia when you take off the yeah. the headset. Like, oh, yeah, I'm just here in my
yeah.
basement apartment.
Yeah.
Bowl of Cheetos, fingers orange from all my snacking.
Yeah, take
nothing's
a deep breath.
Nothing's changed.
And
yeah.
relax. And, but, yeah, so we kind of go for the slower scares. The one we're working on now is Abduction, which is all about... You kind of wake up in the middle of the night unexpectedly and find out you're about to be abducted by aliens. And
oh, cool.
The game takes part. And that's why it's a good multiplayer game is you can wake up beside somebody. You don't have to be alone.
Oh, that's
and,
nice.
That
would be my preferred option.
Then you go through it together.
Excellent.
Yeah. So you can send the other person through the doorway first. You don't
send
have
them
to
be probed.
Yeah. Send
See
the brave,
you later.
The brave person through the door, right? And... But we also don't want to go down that traditional little scary alien in the window, right? And so,
yeah. You'd want to do a little bigger.
Yeah, bigger, meaner, scarier. The kind of thing that isn't.
Because you have a niche market, you're saying. Mm-hmm. You have people that are looking to be scared.
Exactly.
So if you let them down,
yeah,
they're going to shop somewhere else.
Yeah, and you know, if it's just if it's not scary, then they won't enjoy it. And so,
right.
For
us, scarier the better.
Yeah. For us, the story arc and building it up. And for us, we have a fear meter. So the more scared your character gets, the more things fail. So like your flashlight, if you find one,
right.
will be more likely to fail on you if your fear level is high and things like that. So it keeps building up that scare factor.
So give us the link to your site.
Yeah, so you can get to our site, and we have very little on there right now because we're preparing for our E3.
You're brand new.
We're brand new, and we have a partner named Razer, who's showing our stuff at E3.
Mm-hmm.
They've also been great about working with us at GDC and all these other conferences. And so once we're ready with them and we've given them the materials, then they'll go up on the website as well. But you can get to us at www.redironlabs.com.
Cool. And if someone was just a newbie to this whole VR world, where would be a good place to start as far as hardware goes?
If you're really just starting, if you got an Android
phone. And maybe
phone,
you have a budget.
Yeah. If you have a small budget, you got an Android phone. It looks like a joke, but go on eBay, search by the smallest price and get Google Cardboard for about $2 or $3. It has lenses and it will turn your phone into a VR simulation for you.
Cool.
Really good. But it's going to be a slow tech. You're taking a cell phone and turning it into a VR device.
Don't expect a whole lot.
It's not going to be too realistic, but that's a great way to get started.
So what's like a midline price range? What would you go with?
The midline, if you're willing to get your hands dirty and configure files, I'd go with some of the developer kits like the OSVR. I think they call it the HDK, Hacker Development Kit, because that's $299 US.
Right.
I would probably go down that route just because it's high-end hardware, but you'll have to configure it to make it work.
Right.
And if you got a really big budget.
Right. That's more like Oculus Rift type stuff.
Yeah. Right now, we're about to see a battle between Oculus Rift and Vive.
Right.
Oculus is a little bit cheaper. Vive can be a little more pricey, but the Vive has a richer feature set. But the two are also different in design. Like Oculus is kind of more your loose-fitting headset you put on sitting in a chair, for example, and Vive is really meant for that get up and walk around a room and that kind of thing. So
cool. Cool. Well, thank you so much, Lloyd. It was great having you.
Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. This has definitely been I'm sure this is game-changing technology, and we have lots of video gamers around here, and I'm sure lots of gaming listeners that'll be super jazzed to have a little more information.
That's
nice
perfect.
To be more informed before you drop a whole lot of cash.
Yeah, and if anybody ever has any questions, they can. We have a contact link on our site. They can just send me a message, and I'll email them back.
Cool, that's awesome.
Perfect.
Great to know.
Thank you, Jordan.
Thank you.